Welcome to Dig Life Deep with John Aidan Byrne.
Riots in Dublin, Dublin in flames. Norman Rockwell, lies, damn lies and statistics. Ireland and the West's existential crisis. Ira Wolf's Future Shock 2.0. Odeon Capital Conversations. We have lots to discuss on this episode of Dig Life Deep.
We keep digging for the secrets and stories of uncommon and everyday things and interesting people.
Hope you're all well. Dig Life Deep has been missing in action, let's say, for quite a few weeks. I unreservedly apologise. Been extraordinarily busy with multiple projects. You might be aware of some of them. A Norman Rockwell movie project. There's also a separate project which I will reveal details about in a few months. I have another podcast I'm working on. And of course, the top-ranked Odeon Capital Conversations each week with Dick Beauvais and Matt van Alstyne of Odeon Capital Group. It's keeping me busy and that keeps getting great reviews. We keep getting more followers each week as we discuss everything on money and markets, Wall Street, interest rates, inflation. Inflation is easing in America. But we have a housing crisis here in America and we have economic disruption. So it's always exciting to get some guidance and some direction on where we're at with analysis from Dick Beauvais and Matt van Alstyne of Odeon Capital Group. And of course, I haven't been here to give you regular updates of Ira Wolf's Future Shock 2.0. So to make up for that, we're going to do two episodes of Ira Wolf's Future Shock 2.0 on this episode. And then going forward, I hope starting next week, we're going to come back to you on a regular basis with commentary and some interviews without beating around the bush. I've been on multiple projects. I want to talk about something that has really distressed me. It's a global phenomena, but because it's dear to my heart, Ireland, my homeland, and coming to you, by the way, from the United States as always, I was taken aback and quite shocked at the recent riots on the streets of Dublin, around and in or around the inner city area of Dublin. I unreservedly condemn those riots, but it's how the commentary emerged from those riots that got my attention. It got a lot of people's attention and it quite polarizing and divisive. The word far-right groups has been thrown around with reckless abandon to describe the people who were involved in those riots. And there was a lot of arrests, of course, made. And I just read a story from the Financial Times right now to bring you up to date on some of the details. Ireland vows to heed social concerns after anti-immigrant riots in Dublin to reassure locals when placing asylum seekers in areas where there is tension and concern, and where there is tension and concern is in quotes, the Irish Trade Minister is quoted as saying. And a car and a bus burned in Dublin last week during anti-immigrant riots. That was the caption on the photograph. The worst riots in Dublin in decades. The story begins, Ireland's trade minister has vowed to heed concerns about pressure on housing delays after Dublin's worst riots in decades were stoked, the story says, by far-right agitators whipping up anti-immigration concerns. Now, notice the emphasis on far right. That, as I said, got my attention and the attention of a lot of commentators. If my information is right, the people who took to the streets in Dublin, many of them anyway, were from inner city Dublin. They might be characterised as working class people with just ordinary bread and butter concerns. If anything, I would suspect a lot of them politically would be left-leaning and probably supporters of the Labour Party, perhaps Sinn Féin. But certainly if they were far-right, you would assume they're members of far-right parties. I'm not actually aware of that. I don't believe they are. Where? I don't think in many ways they're politicised or radicalised. They were very concerned about what's going on with this whole housing mess in Ireland and asylum seekers being placed in areas where there's a housing crisis. Let me add this important footnote. I'm not against housing asylum seekers per se. I'm certainly not against immigration. It can be great for a nation, but that's a whole separate story. But in brief, immigrants boost a country's economy, especially where there's shortages of labour in areas of an economy. Ireland has shortages in the medical sector, needs doctors, nurses and so on. Ironically, a lot of Irish doctors and nurses are emigrating. The key here is that if you are going to immigrate to a country, to a host country, and they're generous enough and kind enough to welcome you in, as they should be, you have to be kind and generous enough to live by the rules, quote unquote, of that nation. And I'm not implying anything, but for example, you can't set up your own nation state within the host nation. It just doesn't work that way. It'd be like me coming to America, which I did. I immigrated to America and trying to set up a mini Ireland here in Queens or somewhere. You have to assimilate and certainly be proud of your identity and join Irish groups in America, Irish American groups, play your Irish music and foster your own culture. But first and foremost, you have to fly the American flag. You have to be a proud American. And then if you want to fly the Irish flag, fly it underneath the American flag. That's just how it works. It's pretty darn simple. Some people, I'm told, are telling us that it's not quite the way it's going in Ireland. Either that or there's some bigotry among a rump group of narrow-minded people in Ireland. But I think for the most part, what's triggering the latest riots in Dublin was the housing crisis and locals in inner city Dublin, which seems to be where a lot of the rioters came from. They may be from other parts, for all I know, and I may be subject to a mild correction on this. They're frustrated at the fact that the asylum seekers who need to be taken care of, let's be honest, are getting priority over the local housing needs of these locals, not just in inner city Dublin, but throughout Ireland. Let me read this story. The Irish government, the Financial Times story says, has been struggling to accommodate an increasing number of refugees and has warned about the quote-unquote very real possibility of running out of room for them in the coming days. But Simon Coveney, the Trade Minister quoted in the story, denies in the Financial Times story that Ireland was following fellow EU member states such as the Netherlands and Italy, where more than one-fifth, one in five voters have opted for anti-immigrant parties. So you know what's happened in the Netherlands, you know what happened in Italy. Even Germany is grappling with quote-unquote an immigration crisis, and there's some, doesn't get a lot of publicity, but there have been periodic and frequent street rallies protesting the way that immigration has been handled in Germany. Anyway, the Financial Times goes on to remind us that rampaging youths set buses on fire, clashed with police on one of Dublin's busiest streets, and looted shops last week after three children and a care worker were stabbed outside a school that was in inner city Dublin by a man quote-unquote far-right groups had claimed was an Algerian immigrant. The far-right's group description is put in this, inserted into the story by the Financial Times. Coveney said the alleged perpetrator was naturalised and had lived in Ireland for 20 years. Speaking in an interview in Brussels, Coveney said it was a handful of people peddling, this is Coveney's quotes, a warped agenda built on hate and anger and dividing society, which had stirred anti-immigration sentiment on social media, tarnishing Ireland's welcoming and socially progressive reputation. And he reminded readers of the Financial Times that most Irish people were very comfortable with immigration. Ireland has welcomed in the region of 100,000 Ukrainians since the shocking Russian invasion. It also has welcomed other immigrants and had quite a lot of immigrants in Ireland. And at the same time, according to census data this week, Ireland has also seen a spike in its emigration rate. Net, there's more net migration into Ireland, but there's a growing amount of emigration at the same time. In fact, there was a survey done showing that the vast number of young people polled would opt to leave Ireland if the opportunity arose or had a desire to leave Ireland. So there's a huge pent-up demand for emigration of Irish people. out of the country, and that's been precipitated by, we're told, the high cost of living, the housing crisis, quality of life, a kind of existential crisis, a kind of hopelessness, maybe a fear that the country is just drifting. And maybe indeed its culture as well is under attack in this sort of quote unquote new woke era of craziness. Even Conor McGregor entered the argument condemning the attacks, the riots, but said that in effect Irish government was handling this whole situation in a whole reckless fashion. In other words, he was siding with those who are very upset with the way immigration policy has been handled in Ireland, and there have been a few high profile incidents attributed to immigrants. One was the murder of a beautiful young Irish woman in the Midlands, supposedly stabbed by a foreigner now living in Ireland. Ireland is now his homeland. He may well have been naturalised, and it kind of fanned a lot of this anti-immigrant fervour. Something's got to be done. There's a couple of interesting things that should be noted, and we're going to take a break shortly for Ira Wolfe's first segment of Future Shock 2.0, which you've been missing, I know. I've got emails and calls about this, but you're going to listen to Ira in a few moments. Before we play Ira Wolfe, I'm just going to note that immigration is not exactly new in Ireland. What is new is the scale of immigration into Ireland and the way it's been treated as a policy matter. And there's a second issue we'll get to in a moment, which is the biggest part of this. Go back many years, even go back to starting with the Second World War. Ireland welcomed in quite a few refugees fleeing the war in Germany. Admittedly, not a large amount. They welcomed them into Ireland, and for the most part, they assimilated in an incredible fashion. Ireland benefited hugely. One of them was a brilliant German-born Jewish academic who was, in effect, headhunted by Eamon Devlin Valera, our esteemed Irish leader at the time, to set up a department in Ireland, and it went on to wide acclaim. Then you go into the early 50s when Ireland was losing a massive amount of its population. In fact, its population was in huge decline in the 50s and through into the early 60s. There was a period in the early 50s, and you can look up the record, where Ireland was forced to bring in labourers and people from overseas to fill gaps in the Irish labour force. It only lasted a short while, and this might just seem crazy and odd, but even there were immigrants brought in from Poland to work in what was the remnants of the coal mining industry in Ireland. That stopped. The 50s were a really tough time, a time of austerity in Ireland. And then you go maybe back 40 years or so ago, probably the early 80s, when the government was fueling the Irish economy up with capital, and a bubble eventually was created. And of course, that was followed by a collapse in the mid 80s. In the early 80s, there was a flood, not on the scale as we see today, of tradesmen and building workers into Dublin City, because they just did not have enough local tradespeople to fill a lot of the jobs that were available to build houses. That stopped, of course, and then there was another exodus of Irish immigrants, massive exodus in the 80s. And then of course, we know after the 2008 housing crash, we had another exodus. But in between, there was always these inflows of immigrants from overseas. I promise we're going to get to Ira Wolfe in a moment, but I want you to hear me out. Now, there's a reason why this has taken on a huge, extraordinary, different complexion today, and I lay the blame in large part on the Irish government, and some has to do with the passage of legislation a few years ago. It has to do with its drift towards, I hate using this word, but we're going to use it anyway, its drift towards wokeness. If anybody is far right in Ireland, and again, that doesn't even describe, or totalitarian or authoritarian, I would say it's actually probably the Irish government. Clamped down on free speech and so on and so forth, clamped down on basic freedoms, a misuse of language, a misuse of policy, misguided policies on how to bring immigrants into the country and make them as welcome as previous generations. They've just turned it into a crazy extraordinary, sickening, dysfunctional, dystopian madness. But we're going to get to the last point, I think, why we have tension in Ireland as well as in Europe. And I'm not going to propose, well, maybe I will propose solutions. But before we get to all of that, it's time for the first missed episode of Future Shock 2.0 with my great friend, the workforce trends expert, top five global thought leader in his field, public speaker, host of the just brilliant Geek Skeezers and Googleization podcast, Ira Wolf. Males in the US economy, Ira, with a bachelor's degree or no degree, there is new studies emerging which points to, is it a crisis we're looking at here, or is it just a change in the culture? But something's going on here for these males without bachelor's degrees and those who graduate with a bachelor's degree.
John, that's such a great question, and it's great to be back on Future Shock 2.0. You know, I thought these were just incredible trends that just popped up, and they're not surveys. These are just stats. This is just stats from Federal Reserve Bank and Bureau of Labor Statistics and so forth. Here's one. The unmarried rates for men without bachelor's degrees, the unmarried rate, doubled since 2000. So for the age group 40 to 44, we're not talking about unmarried in their 20s and 30s. We're talking 40 to 44 year olds for males. The unmarried rate doubled since in the last 23 years. So without a bachelor's degree, there's 30%, 3 out of 10 males in the U.S. Are unmarried between the ages of 40 and 44. The rate just 20 years ago was 15%. With the bachelor's degree, it's now 22%. So 1 out of 5 males with a bachelor degree also are unmarried. And just 20 years ago, early 2000s, actually, it was 10%. So a huge drop. Now, women, interesting enough, it's steady. It's about 15% are unmarried between the age of 40 and 44. So one of the implications, I was trying to think what that might mean. And just yesterday, I was sharing with you earlier, I was with a client and we interviewed 8 supervisors, either entry-level supervisor position, or there were 2 that were aspiring to grow into a plant manager role. And there was a distinct difference between the men and the women of how they looked at managing their employees. So again, this is just riffing here. I just had to think is, you know, we're talking about more empathy in the workplace, more caring, creating more meaningful work, having better connections, very different than the age that we grew up in, what it was, what a culture was like. I'm wondering if we have more unmarried men that have no, well, it doesn't mean they don't have children, it doesn't mean they don't have a partner, but the relationship is just different. Will they lack the empathy, the compassion, the caring? They don't have obligations. So what does that mean? Does that make them more mobile because they don't have to uproot a family? So there's a whole lot of research that'll probably go into that, or a whole lot of implications in there. At the same time, and I thought this was interesting, and I'm going to just switch gears here real quickly, is the labor participation rate for 25 to 34 year olds. So this is the young, this is, you know, 20 years younger. Men with BAs in the early 1990s, 96% of males participated in the workplace between that age. Now it's only 87%. So close to a 10% drop just in the last few years of men with BAs dropping out of the workforce. Men without BAs went from 94 to 87%. So again, a significant drop there. But women also dropped. So with BAs, it dropped from 85 to 82% slight, and it may be recovering. I would suspect that rate's going to probably go up after the pandemic because we had this she session, more and more women. But women without BAs dropped from 75% to 70%. So, you know, as much as we see that, I think this whole college thing, and I know we're going to talk about this in another segment, what college looks like. When we talk about with and without BAs, but we still have men without BAs or with BAs dropping out of the workforce, we have a lower rate of women entering the workforce and much higher without BAs. Again, it's a very confusing market. But I thought these trends with and without bachelor's degrees, and especially with the men, and then you kind of layer on the top what married rates are. You know, we're living in this never normal. it's like every day there's another twist, and it's very complex. But every change in demographics has a significant impact on the workplace.
Thank you, Ira Wolf, and we'll have more from Ira Wolf and Future Shock 2.0 near the end of this segment. Want to slightly nuance something I said there earlier about taking care of refugees, as we should the world over. History is replete with stories of refugees fleeing famines, persecution, and all kinds of atrocities, which is not to mean there's not a distinction between refugees and refugees. What I mean by that is nations are not nations without borders. There has to be some careful ways to approach this matter. In other words, somebody is fleeing horrible persecution under a shocking regime or famine. We do have a moral obligation to take care of the least of our brethren, but it's an entirely different matter if people are trying to sneak into a country to take full advantage of its generosity. While I'm not suggesting that's happening on a wide scale in Ireland, it could be happening on some scale. Nations without borders are not nations. Yes, let's take care of all our immigrants into Ireland, deserving of support, and they have been a blessing to Ireland's economic development, but we have a total mess on our hands otherwise. Now, I want to pick up on my earlier comments and get to the point of what's going on in Ireland. Another statistic here. It's important to put a lot of things in context. Ireland is the Republic of Ireland is a small population by international standards, something in the region of 5 million and probably another 1.5 million in six northern counties. But Ireland is grappling with a massive housing crisis and a homeless crisis, and as many as 13,000 residents in Ireland were in emergency accommodations, according to the latest statistics. Now, we had the riots in Dublin, and it was met with quite hysterical headlines. Dublin on fire, riots in Dublin, and then immigrants and refugees were brought into the narrative, and the Irish government unleashed I suppose what could be called some pejorative terms for those who are rioting on the street there recently, and I unreservedly condemn those riots. I think the finger pointing by the government was quite misleading, and I don't think, as a general matter, Irish people are against immigration. Let me just add, I spoke there earlier about where we had waves of immigration to Ireland even in the 20th century. Now, certainly not on the scale as we have today. I mentioned the Second World War, I mentioned the early 50s, a brief spate of immigration, and then in the 1980s. I should add to that, and this is quite colourful, anybody who grew up in Ireland during my era will remember a lot of the towns in provincial and rural Ireland, and in the capital of Dublin, had just these wonderful Italian-run restaurants. Families from Italy came over and opened restaurants. And the quirky thing is that, as far as I can recall, they were selling fish and chips, not pizza. That may have changed. But those families integrated so well, and they were beloved and are beloved by locals. Some of them married locals. Just added a great flavour to the culture. Don't know if anybody has ever documented that. I wanted to write a story many years ago about it when I was a young cub reporter. Didn't get the chance, but that's anyway a separate episode sometime. So what's going on in Ireland? It's a good question. Let's have some more context. There's this notion being peddled that Ireland is one of the wealthiest, or maybe the wealthiest country on the planet. That's because of the weird way wealth is measured in Ireland, by gross domestic product. And we know, of course, that GDP has greatly distorted the real financial picture of Ireland. It almost has a Chinese situation where we're not getting great statistics. But if we go by, and then I'm going to get finally to the point of what really is going on in Ireland, in my estimation, and I just want to add to the debate. I might take some criticism for this. Back in 1985, Irish GDP, according to the data, Irish GDP per capita was 6,000 as measured in US dollars. Iceland had twice Ireland's GDP then. Netherlands had a GDP of 9,000 US dollars. And of course, inflation has caught up with things since then, but it gives you a sense of the trend lines. And then in the 1990s, Ireland began to converge with its European peers. And then there was this escalation in growth and GDP. And then Ireland was given the description of Celtic Tiger. We were considered a prosperous nation. And then, of course, we had a bust fueled by excessive credit in 1985. Just want to put that in context. This GDP, of course, we know has been greatly distorted by inflows and outflows of taxes, and where taxes and revenues are being booked by the multitude of multinationals in Ireland who are moving funds into Ireland, moving it out, booking profits there and then taking it out. Even according to Patrick Honohan, he was the former governor of the Central Bank of Ireland, Ireland's not quite as rich as GDP numbers would tell us. If we measure Ireland by gross national income or GNI, Ireland's a much poorer country by that definition. And Honohan, the former governor of the Central Bank, says if we measure Ireland by consumption per capita, then we're way down at the bottom of the league. By this metric, Ireland is closer to New Zealand, Israel and Italy than the US, Switzerland or Norway. And then back to the GNI numbers. By GNI numbers, Ireland's still way behind a lot of other countries, including the US, Denmark, Iceland, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Norway, Singapore, Sweden, Switzerland and other countries. We're not a wealthy nation by that standard. And of course, we know that there's, in a sense, two Irelands. One, the Ireland of the multinationals, and then the other Ireland with a very weak and poorly managed manufacturing base and low income. And then Ireland with the massive housing crisis. And again, keep it in context. It's only a nation of 5 million people. In the Republic of Ireland, I heard Peter Sheehan had a segment recently about Ireland, which was kind of interesting, and he hit some home runs. I didn't quite recognise the Ireland he was describing in his segment. He never mentioned the housing crisis and the structural problems, I thought, but maybe you have to buy his research to get, because he said there's a scarcity of capital in Ireland right now, and that could well be true. But, you know, Ireland's not, hasn't had this, he talked about this rapid transformation over 40 years and compared us, I think, on a scale with China and other countries. But I think I don't recognize that Ireland. I mean, Ireland still has a massive infrastructure problem. It's not like Dublin has exploded into some massive metropolis. Dublin is the capital city and has maybe a million plus spread out. And then if you take the island as a home, Belfast is just over 500,000. The next biggest city is Cork, under 200,000. Derry, 93,000. Galway city, 76,000. So you have a series of small towns. Most people still live outside Dublin. And I said, Dublin doesn't even have its own subway system. They can't afford it. So just put everything in context. Here's, I think, what's happening in Ireland. And I'm going to come back to it in a moment. Before we get to the final point, you probably have noticed how the riots in Dublin and the situation there went viral on across the globe. I was curious to pick up on some of the comments posted on various interviews that were done on YouTube, one of them by Russell Brand, and we know he's having his own issues at the moment, but he has a massive following. He riffed about the situation in Ireland, and I took a look at some of the commentary underneath. He got a lot of followers on that one. A person calling himself Patrick posted a comment, and here's what he said. I'm a legal immigrant in Ireland from Portugal, according to Patrick. And he said that people here in general are far from racist, speaking about Irish people and just the residents. As an outsider to Ireland, Patrick says, I can see why they are infuriated. Anyone can get into the country. No background checks, no visas, sometimes no papers at all. Nothing, says Patrick. And if they just want to come here and do nothing, the government doesn't only allow them, but gives them free housing, free medical allowances, etc. According to Patrick, all paid by taxpayers. And on top of it, Irish people themselves sometimes don't get the help they need because somehow they are not the priority, according to Patrick. And then he goes on to say, and that's just the tip of the iceberg on how the government are failing the Irish people. Patrick concludes, sad to see how many young people and highly qualified /needed professionals are leaving Ireland because of the problems that could be easily fixed. And that's Patrick. There's another comment on the Russell Brand commentary in Ireland. I don't know who this guy is. It's a handle that I can't make out. Thank you, Russell, for highlighting what's happening to our country, talking about Ireland. Almost every village, most with no police station or unmanned, and town in Donegal, in rural Donegal, an isolated place with its own economic challenges, has now undocumented, unvetted young men, he meant, I guess, from countries where there is no war and often bust into Donegal in the middle of the night. Why are they destroying their passports? This person asks on the Russell Brand commentary with no consideration for the Irish people. I have no way to verify these comments, but this is what they posted. You would have to believe there's some truth or validity in it. I recall a comment posted on the video released in recent days by Sihan talking about Ireland. Some young man from Ireland said the biggest problem Ireland had that Sihan didn't cover was the housing crisis. So we leave it at that. And then this other final one, Elon Musk. Yes, Elon Musk was quoted. He posted a comment on X. He endorsed Conor McGregor. He endorsed Conor McGregor's run for public office, posting that it was not a bad idea. He said it wasn't a bad idea that Conor McGregor was considering a run for office. Elon Musk said the Irish Prime Minister, Taoiseach they're called, Leo Varadkar, he said hated the Irish people. And he posted that to his 164 million followers, Elon Musk. And he's quoted, his post said, "The current Irish government clearly cares more about praise from woke media than their own people." And Musk also criticised a plan to widen Irish laws to tackle incitement to hatred laws on social media platforms. Musk says suppressing the Irish people is the real crime. Which brought to mind something, I think it might have been language used by Conor McGregor. And if you remember, if you go back and check those videos, a lot of people were waving Irish tricolours. Now, that mightn't mean much, or in America, if you're waving a US flag at a public event, it's pretty normal, but it was never strangely encouraged, or people were very reluctant to fly Irish flags publicly as I was growing up, and maybe to this day because it was associated with, rightly or wrongly, republicanism. But anyway, there was a lot of Irish tricolours, they're called, at riots in Dublin. But Conor McGregor used the phrase, I believe it was Conor McGregor, something to the effect, "Rise up, Ireland." And if you're familiar with Irish history and Irish language, we had the Easter 1916 Rising. Don't know if there's a connection there. Just thought I'd bring that up. Stay tuned for my final bit on how we might fix the Irish situation and or what's going on there, the root causes of this. Thank you for sticking with me.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Now, I'm coming to you from the United States of America, from the New York area, and I want to get to the final point about the recent riot in Dublin and what's going on in the Emerald Isle and the lawlessness and the upheaval. There's several points to make. One, Ireland has been corrupted by the influence of wokeness. The idea that big state is right on all these matters, also by the dogma of relativism. Anything goes. We've seen our cherished institutions in Ireland being dismantled or attacked. We've seen the collapse or the upheaval in religious institutions, in Catholic institutions and other institutions, notwithstanding the plague of scandals that have severely damaged these same institutions. And so it's quite easy for people's thinking about the future to have changed. And those changes, including an attitude to family life, to bringing children into the world. And we've seen a collapse in family sizes in Ireland. The fertility rate now is at 1.63 per woman. That's below the replacement level. So smaller families are now the norm in Ireland. Inevitably, that leads to shortages of labour. And so people in Ireland and people in Europe and people in the Western world can't, you know, say, where are all these immigrants coming from? Why are they coming into a country? Well, part of it is because there are labour shortages. There are There is a people problem. These workers have been brought in by companies to fill jobs. We see that in Ireland, at least in the multinationals and in the services sector. Why would anybody be shocked at the presence of immigrants? And if those immigrants are filling jobs and leading good lives, they are more than welcome as far as I can see. But it doesn't properly explain why there's this unregulated and reckless kind of immigration and no controls, and it's not managed very well. So there's a very flawed immigration system as far as Ireland goes. And so therefore, the local populations are deeply troubled, as they should be. And then, of course, we have the law of rising expectations. Irish people have been told the economy is a wealthy economy. So even though we know the reality is a little more nuanced and a lot different than what the official statistics are touting, it's not quite the wealthy country. We have a demographic crisis. We have the dogma of relativism, anything goes. When we have that all throughout the Western world. What has the Irish government got to do with that? Well, they've manipulated, to a large degree, public opinion. We saw that with the passage some years ago of the Eighth Amendment to the Irish Constitution, which legalized abortion. And we'd been convinced earlier that there was no overriding persuasive push in Ireland for the introduction of abortion. And yet the Irish government knew which way the winds were going. And it's a long story, and we could do a separate episode on this. They sneaked it in by stealth. First, by creating a citizens' assembly, not democratically picked, but the government used assistance from essentially marketing groups to put these folks in place. And one of the things they called for was a referendum on abortion. And the government stood aside and basically took the side of the citizens' assembly. And shame on parties like Fianna Fáil, conservative parties, traditionally defying the will of its own grassroots by supporting that amendment. And we've seen where all of this has led: a total and utter disaster, a catastrophe. That's what people in Ireland will also have to examine their own conscience, where all of this is leading. And the Irish government will have to, I don't know how long this Irish government is going to last. I can see big changes afoot, and I'd like to do a separate episode on that sometime. It's manipulated public opinion, and the Irish people are not going to stand for it much longer, it seems. And we saw the outburst of anger on the streets of Dublin and the riots recently. Somebody called it, the situation there, a tinderbox. Could be a quite apt description. We'll have more on all this in some future episode. And until then, take care. We'll be back again for another episode of Dig Life Deep. And we're going to close with my final segment of Future Shock 2.0 with Ira Wolfe. Before we get to Ira Wolfe, let me just note that the College of St. Rose, a century-old Roman Catholic college in Albany, New York, will close in May 2024 after years of financial struggles. Listen to Ira and you'll get a better sense of what's going on in the world of academia and more upheaval. We'll be back next week. Ira Wolfe, welcome back for Future Shock 2.0. What's happening in the college scene across America, Ira, post COVID-19, which upended a lot of work lives, professional lives, and academic lives, and the academic culture? And now we see, of course, student loan repayments going to pinch a lot of pockets. So I suspect there's a lot of change out there in the college scene.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Thanks for having me back on Future Shock 2.0. And yeah, I don't think we often talk when Alvin Toffler wrote, that's where our name came from, about Future Shock. And it was about, you know, the rapid pace of accelerating change, creating shattering stress and disorientation among people. Well, I think the same thing probably could be said about colleges. I think they're going through a Future Shock 2.0 as well. And, you know, at a time when there's a shortage of skilled employees, the half-life of skills is shortening, and two-thirds of the U.S. population don't have a college degree, a bachelor's degree, and the level of skills we keep changing. You would think that college education would be in huge demand. And yet we are, you know, there's several schools. I live in Pennsylvania, and there's several small colleges that just closed across the country. There's a lot of smaller universities, or not universities, but colleges that are shutting their doors, but their enrollment's dropping. They're having a difficult time. But I found this, and this came from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. And again, this is what started my mind chasing this. The highest concentration of college educated resident is, and this is a pretty wide range. It was between 30% and almost 78%. So, you know, that seems like a pretty wide range to say highest concentration of college educated residents. But most of them were located, the regions that had that above 30% rate of college educated residents was Northeast and West of Colorado. And the lowest percentages was in the Southeast. The concentrations happened to be greatest in New York, Boston, Philly, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And we know San Francisco's struggling, you know, now with some things. Philadelphia's struggling, you know, with areas. And this may relate to something else, but we were talking about commercial real estate. So I wonder if the college graduate scene, you know, is there any correlation with commercial real estate occupancy? Because were they more white collar, you know, knowledge worker type jobs, but also like Chicago, Austin, Phoenix, Minneapolis, Denver. So some of the popular cities, those are the hubs. Those, if you look at the map, those were the hotspots. But I found this super interesting. They also noted where the sharpest declines were. And a lot of it is in the 23 and older group. So what's happening with the 18-year-olds and 19-year-old recent grads going straight into college, that's been declining for a while, people taking a break or you know, it's not a four-year degree, it's a many-year degree, in and out. In the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, there was a 25% decline in enrollment for the 23 and older student. In the Southeast, it was 35%. In the South, what they call South Central, which is Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Texas, LA, Louisiana, it was ranged between 30 and 37% drop. The mountain states had a 33% drop. The Pacific coast had a 23% drop. And North Central, this is the Indiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota areas, South Dakota or North Dakota, 40 to 45% drop.
Jeez.
So, I mean, you're talking pretty significant changes. So colleges for years grew because people went back to school. People who didn't get a degree, they had a college or they interrupted the degree, they went back or they got another degree. Significant drops in enrollment in those populations. But there's also a gap in the younger ones. You know, IBM, and this was out, this is what they released about 2 years ago. 50% of the employees that they hire, of the jobs that they now hire, do not require a college degree. IBM, and prior it was over 80%. So it's not that they don't require education. They don't require a college degree. So it's skill-based. So it's going to a skill-based hiring. What are the skills people need? Where do they get those skills? So very interesting. Some of the things that we talked about in the past was community colleges. Well, community college enrollment is also down, but technical schools are popping up, but a lot of apprentice programs. There a lot of corporate universities are now taking younger people or people that don't have a BA or are willing to learn a brand new skill. They're doing it internally. And again, because things are changing so fast, especially with AI, ChatGPT and the works, we talk about future shock impacting people. Colleges are our pipeline, used to be our pipeline for the talent supply, and that's being disrupted.
You are listening to Dig Life Deep with John Aiden Byrne. You can reach the host in the U.S. at 973-529-4699. That's 973-529-4699. 973-529-4699. Email burndesk@gmail.com. That's burndesk, B-Y-R-N-E, desk@gmail.com. burndesk@gmail.com. Subscribe for free.